Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Here in Ireland for over 40 years, that's four decades of trust, reliability and expertise. Visit Zurich.ie.
Tweet at Drive Time RTE.
Now back to the arrest of suspect Tyler Robinson in the killing of Charlie Kirk in Utah on Wednesday. Tyler Robinson's father recognised him from images released by the FBI and encouraged him to turn himself in, according to reports. The 22-year-old is now in custody, facing charges of aggravated murder, felony discharge of a firearm causing serious bodily injury and obstruction of justice. Well, I'm joined now by Kenneth Gray, who was a special agent with the FBI for 24 years. He's now a senior lecturer in the Department of Criminal Justice at the University of New Haven. And by David Gilbert, who's a reporter with Wired covering disinformation and online extremism. You're both very welcome along to Drive Time. To come to you first, Kenneth, what's your impression of this investigation conducted by the FBI? They say we got him, they got their man.
33 hours. Director Patel said that it took 33 hours from the time of the shooting to the time the subject was in custody. A rapidly evolving investigation, but it's not over. There's still a lot of investigation that needs to be done to put together a prosecution that will be able to convict Tyler Robinson for the murder of Charlie Kirk. Mm-hmm.
Now, there's been real pressure, hasn't there, on the FBI director, Kash Patel. He's controversially a Trump nominee. And before the suspect, Tyler Robinson, was apprehended, there were questions being asked about his ability to deal with a case of this magnitude.
You know, I think the fact that he was able to turn these results in answers that question. 33 hours to come up with the murderer that quickly, that's incredible. So this was a real plus mark for Kash Patel.
But not before he'd suggested the person who killed Charlie Kirk was in custody on Wednesday, which was not the case.
So doing investigations is like making sausage. It's not necessarily something you want to watch the process. But nonetheless, again, there are often false starts when you're doing investigations. I think the mistake here was the rush to announce as opposed to the rush to turn down this as the suspect. That is, it may have been premature to announce that the person of interest was actually the suspect.
Yeah. What's the feeling, though, internally in the FBI around his ability to lead? I mean, is there discontent coming from within over recent firing and forced retirements of very experienced investigators?
So I've been out of the Bureau for 12 years, so I can't tell you exactly what the feeling is right this moment. I can tell you that from the retired agent standpoint, we look at what is going on there, and many of us wonder exactly why some of the decisions were made, but we're outside, so we can't really know what's going on as far as internal politics.
Mm. Did the social media storm around the killing of Charlie Kirk make this investigation more difficult, do you believe?
It certainly makes it more visible. That is, the Bureau is involved in all kinds of different investigations, many of them just as important or if not more so. But this one here has been in the news continually for the last 3 days. And so it certainly becomes something of public scrutiny, both the good parts and the bad parts of it.
In the end, it was down to old-fashioned policing, wasn't it? I mean, you had the father of the suspect essentially telling him to turn himself in, but they called on the public for support. They released the images showing, you know, a white man dressed in a black cap and a sweatshirt. They put them out everywhere. And, you know, as you say, within 33 hours, they had tracked down the individual.
So his father was a retired deputy sheriff. So, of course, he's supportive of law enforcement. But it must have been a hard decision to make, to have to turn his son in. But he encouraged his son to be the one to make that decision to go and turn himself in.
There was also this offer of a $100,000 reward for anyone with information. I mean, we don't think in this instance, do we, that the father of Tyler Robinson was out for a reward. But would that help to bring about a suspect's arrest in general in a case like this, would you say?
In general, rewards are very useful to try to convince a person who may have information but is sitting on the fence. Rewards often make that person decide to do the right thing and provide information. In this case, though, I don't think that this made any difference. I think the father, because of his long time being part of law enforcement, was committed to the idea of having a son do the right thing.
All right, Kenneth, thank you for that. I'd now like to speak to David Gilbert, a reporter with Wired who's covering disinformation and online extremism. David, amid this, the chaos, there were so many conspiracies out there as well because of the lack of concrete information moments and hours after this killing. Tell us about some of the theories that were out there, out online, spreading like wildfire.
Sure. Like, I suppose it happens kind of pretty regularly now when we have these major incidents, especially in the US. What happens is that everyone that is on social media decides to frame the incident to kind of fit their own narrative. So in this case, because Charlie Kirk is a pretty prominent right-wing mm-hmm. podcaster, we saw many people on the right, everyone from the president right down to people on fringe extremist groups, claim immediately, within minutes, that this was a leftist, this was Antifa, this was someone aligned with the Democratic Party, and that, you know, these are the people that we need to go after. And, you know, there was quite a lot of talk of people saying that the country was now at war, that everyone needs to step up. And it very quickly, the temperature rose on social media and within the country, and it got pretty hostile pretty quickly.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the rumours that were out there. There was one surrounding a private jet that the killer may have hightailed it from nearby Provo Airport, as authorities had failed to close the airspace in the surrounding area. I mean, were some of these rumours and some of this speculation, was this kind of a criticism of the authorities and what was seen initially as slow progress in the investigation?
Of course, I think the missteps that you spoke about earlier that Kash Patel made in terms of posting the fact that they had someone in custody and then having to walk that back moments later just created this void, this lack of certainty that people on social media will just fill. And we just saw a huge amount, as you say, a flood of conspiracies, everyone coming up with their own take on it. There was a lot of people, because of Charlie Kirk's pretty staunch pro-Israel stance over the years, and the fact that in recent weeks he had started to kind of claw that back and criticize them a little bit, people immediately decided that Israel or the Israeli government was behind this shooting without any evidence. None of these claims were backed up with anything like facts or like evidence, but they were pushed out and they were shared by millions of people, all because people just were angry and upset, and they wanted to feel as if they had some control of the situation.
It certainly provoked a very extreme reaction. I mean, we heard from Alex Jones, the influencer, was also a conspiracy theorist around school shooting, but he said, this is a war, this is a war, this is a war, during a live stream in that time. I mean, what sort of impact can that have in the moments after a political assassination on people who are just, as I say, looking for information, feeling very angry, feeling very upset? I mean, how does that spill over into real life?
Well, I think if you think about the current state of the US that it has been like for months now since Trump came back into office, it is like a tinderbox. People are on edge. People are very, very angry about lots of different things. And something like this happens, it can tip someone over the edge. And then you have someone, as you say, like Alex Jones, who is calling this a war. You have many, many other people calling it a war. And as one researcher said to me this week, 99.9% of the people who are angry and shouting on Twitter or on Facebook or on TikTok about this, that's how they vent their anger. Mm-hmm. But for the 0.1%, that's going to move from shouting on Twitter to doing something in real life, because they have watched someone like Alex Jones or someone else that they listen to tell them that the country is now at war and they need to do something, and they will go, okay, well, I'm going to do something. And that's what we saw this week with that shooter, that's the 0.1% of the country who has decided, okay, I'm not going to just sit back and post online anymore. I'm going to actually take action and do something.
Very sobering and frightening times. David Gilbert, thank you for your take on that. And before that, Kenneth Gray.